First thing first, a video from a familiar face.
All right, this is CS50, and this is the start of week 3. I'm sorry I couldn't be there with you today, but allow me to introduce CS50's own, Rob Bowden.
The filmography in that video is fantastic. All right, so first, there's another lunch. It's tomorrow at 1:15. There's no lunch this Friday. It is with Quora, and Tommy's not here yet, but one of the people there is former head TF, Tommy McWilliam. So he's a fun guy. You should come. All right. So last week, we started breaking apart about what a string really is. We've known since the beginning that it's a sequence of characters, but last week, we delved into the fact that what is really a sequence of characters, well, we now have arrays of characters. And we know that a string, it's an array of characters, and at the very end, we have this special null byte, this \0, that indicates the end of the string. And so a string is an array of characters, but we can have more than just an array of characters. We can have an array of any type of thing we want. So if you recall from last week, the ages program that David introduced really quickly. So first thing we're going to do is ask the user for an integer, the number of people in the room. Once we have that integer, we're declaring an array. Notice this bracket syntax. You're going to get used to that. So we're declaring an array of integers called ages. And there are n integers in this array. So this pattern right here, this for int I equals 0, I is less than n, I plus plus, that is also going to be a pattern that you get very used to, because that's pretty much how you're always going to iterate over arrays. So remember that n is the length of our array. And so here, we are repeatedly asking for the age of person I in the room. After this, we go down, and for whatever arbitrary reason, we then print out how old they're going to be a year from now. And running that program, so let's make ages. \ages. So number of people in the room, let's say there are 3. Let's say the first person is 13, the next is 26, and the last is 30. So then it'll iterate over those 3 people, print out 14, 27, and 31. So remember that when we declare an array of size n, the indices in that array, the array has values in indices 0, 1, 2, all the way up to n minus 1. So when we said there were 3 people in the room, and we put in here, the first iteration through this loop, I is going to be 0. So in index 0, we are assigning the first age the user enters. Then in index 1, we're entering the second int the user enters. And in index 2, the last int. So notice that an array of size 3 does not have anything in index 3. This is not valid. All right, so going back here. Okay. So now that we've dealt with arrays, we have some familiarity. Now we're going to move on to command line arguments, which are going to be pretty relevant to this problem set. So up until now, whenever you've declared your main function, we've said int main void. So void just means that we aren't passing any arguments to this function. Now we're going to see that main can take some arguments. Here we call them int argc and string argv brackets, the brackets once again indicating that we're dealing with arrays. So here, string argv brackets, we're dealing with an array of strings. So argc, that's going to indicate how many arguments we pass to this program. And to see what that means, let's close this. Okay. So up until now, we've run every program like \ages. We can also, at the command line, pass arguments, thus the term command line arguments. So the first argument, hello world. So here, argc would be 3. It's the count of the arguments at the command line. There is always at least one, or argc is always at least 1, since \ages itself counts as one of the command line arguments. Then hello is the first, if dot slash ages is the zeroth, then hello is the first and world is the second command line argument. So string argv, we're going to see, contains the strings dot slash ages, hello, and world. And by David's request, we're going to play a video introducing that.
Up until now, in programs we've written, we've declared main as int main void. And all this time, that void has simply been specifying that the program does not take any command line arguments. In other words, when a user runs a program, he or she can provide command line arguments by writing additional words or phrases after the program's name at the prompt. Well, if you do want your program to take command line arguments, one or more such words, we need to replace void with a couple of arguments. So let's do that. Include cs50.h, include standard.io.h, int main, and now instead of void, I'm going to specify an int called argc and an array of strings called argv. Now, argc and argv are simply conventions. We could have called these arguments most anything we want. But what is important is that argc is an int because, by definition, it is going to contain the argument count, the number of words in total that the user has typed at his or her prompt. Argv, meanwhile, argument vector, is going to actually be an array storing all of the words that the user has typed at his or her prompt. Let's proceed to do something now with one or more of these command line arguments. In particular, let's go ahead and print whatever word the user types after the program's name at the prompt. Open bracket, close bracket, printf, %s backslash n, comma, and now I need to tell printf what value to plug into that placeholder. I want the first word that the user has typed after the program's name, and so I'm going to specify argv bracket 1, close parenthesis, semicolon. Now, why bracket 1 and not bracket 0? Well, it turns out automatically stored in argv 0 is going to be the program's actual name. So the first word that the user types after the program's name is, by convention, going to be stored in argv 1. Let's now compile and run this program. Make argv 0 dot slash argv 0, and now a word like hello. Enter. And there we have it. Hello.
All right. What was that? So, taking a look at the program that he just introduced to us, well, just to show, if we print argv0, make, what is it, argv0, dot slash argv0. So as expected, it's printing out the name of the program, since argv0 is always going to be the name of the program. But let's do something a bit more interesting. So in the problem set, you'll be introduced to this function, a2i. So what do we use a2i for? That's going to convert an integer, or well, a string to an integer. So if I pass the string 123 to A2i, that'll convert that to the integer 123. So we're going to convert the first command line argument to an integer, and then just print that integer. So basically, we're kind of re-implementing getInt, just the integer is entered at the command line instead of in the program interactively. So then making argv0, let's do it in here. Can't close that. Okay, so running argv0, and let's enter the integer 123412. So it'll print the integer 123412. There are some subtleties to A2i that it'll stop caring about anything beyond a valid numeric character, but that doesn't matter. So what do you think happens if I do this? Segmentation fault. So why is that? If you look back at our program, we're converting argv1, the first argument after the program name, to an integer. But there is no argument passed after the program name. So here, we see that this is a buggy program, since if we try to run it without any arguments, it will just crash. So another common pattern you'll see is something like if argc is less than 2, indicating that there was not at least the program name and a first argument, then we'll do something like printf, not enough command line arguments. That's probably not a good one to print. It's probably something like you should enter an integer at the command line. I'll just end it there. And then return 1. So remember that at the end of our program, if we return 0, that sort of indicates success. And main also automatically returns 0 if you don't. So here, we're returning 1 to indicate that that's not success. And you can return whatever you want. Just 0 indicates success, and anything else indicates failure. So let's run this version of things. So now, if we don't enter a command line argument, it will correctly tell us not enough command line, didn't finish the sentence. Else, if we actually pass it one, it can complete the program. So this is how you'll use argc in order to validate the number of command line arguments that were actually passed. So let's make this program a bit more complicated. And look at this. I don't want to use that. Look at the second iteration of things. So now we're not just printing the first command line argument. Here we're iterating from int I equals 0, I is less than argc, I plus plus, and printing argv index I. So this pattern, again, this is the same pattern as before, except instead of calling the variable n, we're using argc. So this is iterating over each index in the array, and printing each element in that array. And so when we run this program, well, I didn't enter any command line arguments, so it just prints program name. If I enter a bunch of things, it'll print one each on its own line. Okay, so let's take this one step further, and instead of printing each argument on its own line, let's print each character of each argument on its own line. So remember that argv is an array of strings. So what is a string but an array of characters? So that means that argv is really an array of an array of characters. So taking advantage of that, first let's just consider, let's ignore this for now. Let's just consider the string argv0. So if we want to print each character of argv0 on its own line, then we'll want to do the pattern we're used to, I is less than the length of the array, which here is strlen of, that's not what I want to do. String s equals argv0. So I is less than the length of our array, which in this case is an array of characters, I plus plus. And so as we saw last week, it's ideal if we move that strlen outside of the condition, since then we'll be getting the strlen of s each time we go through the loop, and it's not going to be changing. So we'll set it equal to n over here. So now we're iterating over each index in the array. And so if we want to print each character in that array, %c is the flag we want to use for characters. And now s bracket I is going to be the string index character I. So if the string were hello, then s0 is going to be h. S bracket 1 will be E, and so on. So now we want to combine these two things. We want to print each character of each command line argument. So we're going to have a nested for loop. And conventionally, the first counter is I, the next is going to be J, and will be the strlen of argv I. I is less than N. I plus plus. And now instead of printing argv I, so argv bracket I is going to index, that's going to be the ith command line argument. argv_i, j is going to be the jth character of the ith argument. So this is equivalent to, I'll get rid of this up here now since we put it into that loop. So this is equivalent to string s equals argv_i, and then s bracket j. But we don't need to declare this variable s. Instead, we'll just combine these two into what we had, argv_i_j. Good call. So this is broken. If I actually ran it, we would have realized this. So the counter I care about in this particular for loop is j, the iterator. So we would have run into issues, probably an infinite loop, if we hadn't fixed that. That's why we're also talking about debugging today. Okay, so let's run this program. And let's actually add a separate printf rate here that will just print another line, since this means when we run the program, there will be a blank line in between each character of each command line argument. Well, we'll see what that means. Okay. Oh, I have some bug. Error implicitly declaring library function strlen. So going back into our program, I forgot to hash include string.h. So string.h is going to be the header file that declares the function strlen. Okay, compiles. Now let's run it. So just that. It's going to print out our first command line, or our program name. Hello world. It's going to print each thing, each character on its own line. Okay. So let's actually take this one step further. And instead of using string.h, let's think about how we'd implement our own strlen function. So I'll immediately give the function signature. So let's call it my strlen. And it's going to take a string as an argument. And we expect it to return the length of that string. So let's reach that guy. Yes. Okay. So remember from the earlier slide, that was also from last week, that an array of characters, well, a string. So let's say this is our string s. So if s is the string hello, then in memory, H-E-L-L-O. So in memory, that's going to be, and then this backslash zero character. So how do we get the length of s? Well, the trick is looking for this backslash zero character, this null terminator. So the algorithm is going to be something like, that's few enough characters that let's have this hand represent some counter that's, let's call this int length. So starting from over here, we're going to iterate over our string. So the first character, it's h. That is not backslash zero, so the length is 1. Iterate to the next character, e. That's not backslash zero, length is 2. L, 3, L, 4, O, 5. And finally, we reach backslash zero. And so that means, well, this string is over, so let's return 5. So actually implementing that, we see let's use a first, my int length equals 0, my right hand. And we're going to iterate. Oh, shoot. Good call. Boom. So int length equals 0. So now, while s length does not equal, and then backslash 0. So remember, this backslash 0 indicates the end of, it is an actual character, and it indicates the end of the string, just like also backslash n is an actual character. Backslash zero is going to indicate the end of our string. I don't want to put that there. And while s indexed by length is not equal to the null terminator, then we're just going to increment length. So then at the end of our program, length is eventually going to be 5 in this case, and we'll just return length. Okay, so now down here, I could also do my strlen. Let's compile it to make sure everything runs smoothly. Was I doing it in 2? Or was that 1? All right, let's do 2. All right, so that's already 2. Works as anticipated, although was that the one I did it in? Yes, okay. This version of things did not have the printf new line after, but doesn't make a difference. Okay, so worked as expected. Now, we can even combine this one step further, where notice here, well, first we're grabbing the strlen of argvi, and then we're iterating over each character in that string. So instead of doing that, what if we just combine this logic of waiting until we hit backslash zero right into this for loop? So iterate until argvij, iterate while argvij does not equal backslash zero. So let's run it first. All right, so here, this condition is saying, let's clear that. So now, let this be our argv. So when I just ran that program before, argv is an array of strings. And so if I run it with dot slash argv2 hello world, then it's going, the argv itself is length 3 for argv0, hello, and world. And inside of each of these indices is itself an array where this will be dot, this will be slash, I don't know if that was the right direction, I don't think it was, arv dash, need more space, let's cut into this array, arv dash 0, and then backslash 0, and then in this array will be hello, let's say he backslash 0, and finally wo backslash 0. So the algorithm that we just wrote, the nested for loops, what they're doing is we first have the counter I and then j. This would be easier with code on the screen. Let's just go back to this. Okay, so notice that I is the iterator that's iterating over each argument, each command line argument, and j is the iterator iterating over each character in that command line argument. So what this innermost printf is doing, let's go back to that, is we have printf argv 00, printf argv 01, printf argv 02, 03, 04, 05, 06, but now argv 07 is going to equal backslash 0. So then we exit that for loop, and now I iterates to 1. And now we're going to print argv 10, argv 1-1. Now, since I cut hello short, argv1-2 is again going to be \0, and so we'll again increment I and continue, and so on, until we print out all of world, and those are our three command line arguments, and we'll exit out of the outermost loop and finish our program. Okay. So let's come back here. So you'll gain some familiarity with command line arguments on this particular problem set. Now, debugging. So you probably have already had to do some debugging with your previous problem set. And one very easy way of debugging, first let's look at a buggy program. Okay. So for now you can, well, walking through this program, we're going to ask the user for an integer, grab that integer, and then arbitrarily, we have a while loop that is just going to decrement I until it's equal to 10. Let's just assume I'm entering an integer greater than 10. So decrement I until it's equal to 10. And then we have another while loop that while I does not equal 0, we're going to decrement I by 3. So if you see the intent of the bug here, it's that this will decrement I to be 10. And then this while loop will decrement I from 10 to 7 to 4 to 1 to negative 2 to negative 5 and so on to negative infinity, since I will never actually equal 0. So, and then at the end of this program, we have the foo function, which is going to print out that I. So this is a short and trivial program, and the bug is obvious, especially after I just said what the bug was. But the intent here is, well, this might actually look like some of your solutions from Greedy from the last problem set. And maybe you do have some infinite loop in your program, and you have no idea what's causing it. So a very useful debugging technique is to just add printfs all over your code. So here, I'll add a printf outside first while loop. And here, I'll add a printf, and I'll just print I. I'll even do first while loop, I. Outside second while loop, once again, print inside of here, value I. And let's run this. So \debug, enter an integer, let's do 13, and boom. We see that we are infinite looping inside of the second while loop. So now we know what the bug is. But printf debugging is perfectly great. But once your programs get longer and more complicated, there are more sophisticated solutions to getting things working. So let's remove all these printfs. Okay. And let's make sure I didn't break anything. Okay. So, program we're going to introduce is called GDB for GNU Debugger. So, GDB, we're going to Well, actually, let's remove debug for a second and make debug again. So notice here that, well, actually, first, a good lesson in command line arguments. Notice that this clang command that is compiling everything is being passed at the command line these command line arguments. So exactly how you are going to be using command line arguments as we did before and as you will in pset 2, that's how clang is using them. So notice that this first flag, -ggdb3, what that's saying is, clang, you should compile this file with the intent that we will eventually need to debug it. So as long as you have that flag, then we can GDB debug. And it'll open up the GNU debugger. So there are a lot of commands that you need to get used to. First one that you'll probably immediately need is run. So what is run going to do? It's going to start our program. So run, starting program. The program asks us for an integer, 13. And then it's infinite looping as expected, except I removed the printf, so we don't even see that. Exited normally. Oh. It's possible that it wrapped all the way around back to, ignoring that. Assume it did not exit normally. There's a complicated answer to that. That's not very useful. So just running our program inside of this debugger doesn't help us in any way, since we could have just done ./debug from outside GDB. So the one command that you'll probably, and I'll quit this, control D or quit, both work. So let's open it up again. Another command that you'll probably immediately want to get used to is break. So we'll break on main for now, and then I'll explain that. So what break means is, here we see we set a breakpoint at this line in debug.c. So what break means is that when I type run, the program is going to continue running until I hit a breakpoint. So when I hit run, the program starts, and then it breaks as soon as it enters the main function. So that's going to be a pretty common, break main is going to be something you pretty commonly do. And now, to introduce you to some more commands, notice here that it's saying we broke at line 11, which is printf enter an integer. So the command next is going to be how we go to the next line of code. This is going to allow us to step through our program line by line. So next. Now, line 12, we're going to get the integer. Next. And if you just hit enter again, it'll redo the last thing you did. So I don't need to type next each time. So enter an integer, 13. So now, line 14, while I is greater than 10, I'll do next. And we see we're going to decrement I. We're going to decrement I again. So now, another useful command is print. So print is going to print out the value of variable. Let's print out the value of variable I. So print I is going to say I is 11. Now we next again, while I is greater than 10, so I is still greater than 10 since it's 11, I minus minus, let's print I again. As expected, it's 10. So now next, it's going back to the condition, I is greater than 10, but I is now 10, so it's not greater than 10, so we expect it to fall out of the while loop, and now we're below that line of code, and another command, list, is just going to display the previous and next couple of lines of code in case you lost yourself. So we just exited this while loop, and now we have entered this while loop, line 18. So while I does not equal 0. And next, I equals I minus 3. And we'll notice this will just keep going. We can print I. Each command sort of has shortcuts, so P is short for print. So we can P I, just keep holding N, or keep doing next, print I again. See, now it's negative 167. So this will go on forever, but not really forever, since you just saw it will actually end at some point. So that is beginning GDB. But let's do one more thing in GDB. Debug. OK, so in this particular case, the infinite loop happened to be inside of the main function. And for now, just accept that I'm going to move the infinite loop into the foo function. So remember that at the end of this program, well, this was originally calling foo, which was just going to print I. But now we're calling foo, which is going to decrement I until it's 0, and then print that variable. OK. Save that, quit, make debug, and now GDB debug. OK, so immediately, if I just run, then I'm not going to be able to actually step through my program line by line. So let's break at main and then type run. Okay. So the go through this, printf, enter an integer, get the integer, 13. Then we're going to keep decrementing until I, we're going to keep decrementing until I is greater than 10. Then we're going to fall through the while loop and get to the line. Let's open it up in a separate window. Okay, so we decremented until I was no longer greater than 10, and then we called the function foo. So what happened as soon as I hit function foo? Well, I called foo, and then I no longer had control over GDB. So as soon as I hit next at this line, things continued until this happened where the program exited when assume it didn't exit eventually. You saw it pause for a bit, though. So why did I lose control over the program at that point? Well, when I type next, that goes to the literal next line of code that will execute. So after line 21, the next line of code that will execute is line 22, which is exiting from main. So I don't want to just go to the next line of code. I want to go into the function foo and then also step through those lines of code. So for that, we have an alternative. Let's quit that again. Break main. Run. Next, next, 13. Next, next, next. Carefully before we hit line foo. Okay, so now we're at line 21 where we call foo. We don't want to type next since that will just call the function foo and go to the next line of code. What we want to use is step. So there's a difference between step and next where step steps into the function and next goes over the function. It just executes the entirety of the function and keeps going. So step is going to bring us into the function foo. And we see here now we're back at this while loop that's in theory going to continue forever. And if you hit step when it isn't even a function to call, then it's identical to next. So it's only when you're at a line that is calling a function that step is going to differ from next. So step will bring us here, step, and we'll just infinite loop forever. So you might get used to that as your way of identifying infinite loops is just holding this enter key to see where you get stuck. There are better ways to do that, but for now, that is perfectly sufficient. And stylistically, to conform to style 50, I should have done this. Okay. So one last command to introduce. Let's GDB debug again. So instead of breaking at main, if I know the foo function is also the problem, then I could have just said break at foo instead. Let's say I break at both main and foo. So you can set as many breakpoints as you want. When I type run, it's going to stop at the, let's recompile since I changed things. You'll see this line, warning source file is more recent than executable. So that means that I just went in here and changed these to conform to style 50, but I did not recompile the program. So GDB makes me aware of that. I'll quit, make debug again, GDB debug. Okay. So now, back to what I was doing, break main, break foo. Now if I run the program, so it's going to continue until it hits a breakpoint. That breakpoint happens to be the first one at main. Now, instead of doing next, 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 next until I hit foo, I can type continue, which will continue until you hit the next breakpoint. So continue will continue, I have to enter the integer first. Continue will continue until I hit the next breakpoint, which is at function foo. So run will run until you hit a breakpoint, but you only type run when it's the first time you're running, when you're starting the program. And then from then on, it's continue. If I just did break main and then ran, it'll break at main and then continue. Since I don't have a breakpoint at foo, enter the integer. then now I'm not going to break at foo, it's just going to infinite loop. Until that. Okay. So, that's intro to GDB. You should start using it in your problem sets. It can be very helpful to identify bugs. If you actually just line by line go through your code and compare what is actually happening with what you expect to happen, then it's pretty difficult to miss your bugs. Okay. So, last week, David brought up this secret key cryptography stuff for the first time, where we don't want passwords just be stored on our computer in some plain text file where someone can come over and just open it up and read them. Ideally, they would be encrypted in some way. And in problem set two, you'll be dealing with one method of encryption, two methods, but they aren't so great. If you do the hacker edition, you're also going to be dealing with decrypting some things. So the issue now is, even if we have the strongest encryption algorithm in the world, if you choose a particularly poor password, then it won't help you very much, since people will still be able to figure it out. Even if they, seeing the encrypted string and it looks like a mess of garbage, it means nothing to them. If they still just need to try a few passwords to figure it out, then you aren't very secure. So, watching a video that makes that point.
Helmet, you fiend! What's going on? What are you doing to my daughter?
Permit me to introduce the brilliant young plastic surgeon, Dr. Philip Schlotkin, the greatest nose job man in the entire universe and Beverly Hills.
Your Highness.
Nose job? I don't understand. She's already had a nose job. It was a sweet 16 present.
No, it's not what you think. It's much, much worse. If you do not give me the combination to the air shield, Dr. Schlotkin will give your daughter back her old nose.
No! Where did you get that?
All right, I'll tell.
No, Daddy, no, you mustn't.
You're right, my dear. I'll miss your new nose, but I will not tell him the combination no matter what.
Very well. Dr. Schlotkin, do your worst.
My pleasure.
No! Wait! I'll tell.
I knew it would work. All right, give it to me.
The combination is... One.
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 Two.
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 Three.
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 Four.
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 Five.
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 So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life. That's the kind of thing an idiot would have on his luggage.
Thank you, Your Highness.
What did you do?
I turned off the wall.
Clayton, didn't you turn off the whole movie?
I must have pressed the wrong button.
Well, put it back on. Put the
yes,
movie
sir,
back
yes,
on.
Yes, sir.
Let's go, Arnold. Come, Gretchen. Of course, you know I'll still have to bill you for this.
All right. So, now that we're already talking about security in some ways, nice little movie poster. So, in recent days, these issues with the NSA monitoring everything, so it can feel it can be difficult to feel like you have some sort of privacy in the online world. Although I couldn't tell you most of the details of Prism. So moving beyond Prism, we're not going to talk about that. Now, think about your laptop. So up here, if I want to switch to my actual account with my little penguin, so I have a password set, and that password is whatever I want it to be. But remember that what I'm logging in with. So this login prompt is some program. It's some program that was written by some person. And so that person, if they are particularly malicious, they could have said, all right, so if the password that I enter is equal to my actual password, or it's equal to some special password, David is awesome or something, then let them in. So a malicious programmer could have access to all of your Macs, or Windows, or anything. So that isn't much of a concern, since, I mean, this login program that's shipped with OS X, hundreds or thousands of people have reviewed this code. And so if in your code somewhere you say, if this string equals equals David is awesome, log in, then someone's gonna be like, wait, this is not right, this shouldn't be here. So that's one way we get things to be kind of secure. But think about even programs that you write. Let's say you wrote the login program. So this login program that you wrote, so obviously you are a good programmer. You're not going to put any malicious if x equals equals David is awesome into your code. But this program, what do you use to compile this program? Something like Clang. So what if the person who happened to write Clang, special cased in Clang, something like, if I am compiling the login program, then enter this code into the login program that says, if x equals equals David is awesome. So not quite yet, but we have the same issue here where Clang, well, thousands if not tens of thousands of people have looked at Clang, have looked at its lines of code and said, all right, there's nothing bad here. Obviously, no one is doing anything this malicious. But what if Clang itself, like, what if I compile Clang? What if I have some compiler that compiles Clang that inserts into Clang this special hack that says, all right, when I compile Clang, then the executable I get should specially look inside of the login program and insert this password equals equals David is awesome. So remember that your compiler itself needs to be compiled at some point. So if what you choose to compile Clang with itself is malicious, then you could be screwed the whole way down the line. So here we have Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie. So this is an iconic photo. Dennis Ritchie is on the right. He is a major, pretty much wrote C. So you can thank him for this class. Ken Thompson's on the left. The two of them basically wrote Unix. So, well, they were major contributors in Unix. There were some others. So Ken Thompson, at some point, he wins the Turing Award. And the Turing Award, I've always heard it referenced this way. It's the Nobel Prize of computer science. So at the Turing Award, he has to give his acceptance speech. And he gives this very famous speech now called Reflections on Trusting Trust, which we have linked to on the course website. And in this speech, he says, all right, so I wrote Unix. And now all of you people are using Unix. Now, remember to say that Linux is a direct descendant of Unix. OXX directly uses Unix. Windows doesn't so much, but a lot of ideas were taken from Unix. So he goes up to the stage and says, all right, I wrote Unix. And just so you guys know, I'm able to log into every single one of your computers. Since I put one of these special if x equals equals equals, or equals equals, Ken Thompson is awesome, then I'm allowed to log in. So people are like, well, how'd you do that? We look at the login program and nothing's there. It's like, well, I modified the compiler to log in the login program so that the login program now will have that x equals equals Dennis Ritchie is, or Ken Thompson is awesome. And they say, well, that's not true. We're looking at the compiler and the compiler doesn't have any lines of code like that. He's like, okay, but what are you compiling the compiler with? And they think, and he's like, well, I'm the one who gave you the compiler you're using to compile the compiler. So what you are compiling a compiler that itself is malicious and will break the login program. And so basically, at that point, there's no way you could look at the source code of the login program to see what is wrong. You couldn't even look at the source code of the compiler to see what is wrong. You would need to look at the you would need to look at the machine code, the actual binary of the compiled compiler to see, wait, these lines of code should not be here. But Ken Thompson took it one step further and said, well, there are these special programs that actually help you read the binary of programs. And so if someone used that program to read the binary, they would see these lines of code. He modified those programs to say, all right, if you're looking at the compiler, don't show this particular set of binary. So then you need to take that a step further, and it's basically that could have taken multiple levels of indirection, and at some point, no one's actually going to be checking. So moral of the story is you're not going to be writing Clang in this class. You're going to be using Clang a lot in this class. For all you know, Clang is a malicious program that is sabotaging every single program you've ever compiled. And to leave you on that very ominous note, see you on Wednesday.
At the next CS50.
Don't you dare say that. No, you can do this. You've done this before. You can do this today. You can do this tomorrow. You've been doing this for years. Just go up there and do this. You can do this!